bring her but to glorious love.
We bring you now The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth. Now here's the minister, Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr.
Have you ever had a great idea that somehow you never got around to trying out? I have a closet full of such ideas. One of them I call the Emmaus Road Hike. It is the idea of organizing a 7-mile walk on Easter afternoon that would end up someplace where people could share in a simple service of communion. I've had this idea for 20 years, but I've never put it to work. Probably I never will. In spirit, however, I have taken the Emmaus Road hike many times. Perhaps you have too. After we've heard from our choir, I invite you to join me in another walk beyond the gates of Jerusalem to that little village where the Lord was known in the breaking of the bread. Good morning, and welcome to The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of Pilgrim Congregational Church. I'm Royal Shepherd, the senior minister, and I'm especially glad to share with you on this great day of life and hope, again, the Easter story. If you can get to church today, I hope that you will. But whether you can or not, I hope you'll join with me in recalling something of that original story of Easter. This morning, I shall read the story of the Emmaus Road as it appears in the J.B. Phillips translation of the New Testament. It is a longer passage than I usually read, but the important thing is that we get the whole story. Then on the same day, we find two of them going off to Emmaus, a village about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And as they went, they were in deep conversation about everything that had happened. While they were absorbed in their serious talk and discussion, Jesus himself approached and walked along with them. But something prevented them from recognizing him. And then he spoke to them. "What is all this discussion that you are having on your walk?" They stopped, their faces drawn with misery. And the one called Cleopas replied, "You must be the only stranger in Jerusalem who hasn't heard all the things that have happened there recently." "What things?" asked Jesus. "Oh, all about Jesus from Nazareth. There was a man, a prophet, strong in what he did and what he said, in God's eyes as well as the people's. Haven't you heard how our chief priests and rulers handed him over for execution and had him crucified? But we were hoping he was the one who was to come and set Israel free." "Yes," And as if that were not enough, it's getting on for 3 days since all this happened. And some of our women folk have disturbed us profoundly. For they went to the tomb at dawn. And then when they couldn't find his body, they said that they had a vision of angels who said he was alive. Some of our people went straight off to the tomb and found things just as the women had described them. But they didn't see him. Then he himself spoke to them. Aren't you failing to understand and slow to believe in all that the prophets have said? Was it not inevitable that Christ should suffer like that and so find his glory? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them everything in the scriptures that referred to himself. They were by now approaching the village to which they were going. He gave the impression that he meant to go on further, but they stopped him with the words, "Do stay with us. It is nearly evening, and soon the day will be over." So he went indoors to stay with them. Then it happened. While he was sitting at table with them, he took the loaf, gave thanks, broke it, and passed it to them. Their eyes opened wide, and they knew him. But he vanished from their sight. Then they said to each other, "Weren't our hearts glowing while he was with us on the road, and when he made the scriptures so plain to us?" And they got to their feet without delay and turned back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and their friends all together, full of the news. "The Lord has really risen. He has appeared to Simon now." Then they told the story of their walk and how they recognized him when he broke the loaf. When I was a boy, I occasionally worshipped in a tiny Episcopal church located in a poor village among the hills of New York's Hudson Valley. It was called the Church of the Resurrection. The vicar was an elderly Swedish man whom we knew as Mr. Lundgren. He did the best he could with very limited physical resources. There were no Tiffany windows such as those we have in Pilgrim Church, but Mr. Lundgren had painted the little plain glass windows himself. I remember bright toadstools, leafy vines, butterflies, and birds, all leaping up out of the ground. Behind the altar hung a picture that was also Mr. Lundgren's work. It was a scene often depicted in art. Rembrandt drew it several times. It was the supper at Emmaus, Jesus sitting at a table with the two disciples whom we meet in the 24th chapter of Luke. Mr. Lundgren was no Rembrandt, but his white-robed Christ dominated that little room, which was hardly as large as our chapel upstairs in Pilgrim Church. His presence defined the meaning of our life in that room. You knew that he was the life, the truth, and the way. It is only 7 miles from Jerusalem to Emmaus, just an easy afternoon stroll for people used to going about by the means of locomotion with which they were naturally endowed. But 7 miles can be a tiresome piece of road for a man to walk alone, especially when he is in a depressed state of mind. Cleopas is depressed, but he will not be alone. We see him now, one man walking down the road, about to pass through the city wall. But there, under the arch of the gate, we observe a second man stepping out of the shadows to join him. The other man's motions are stealthy, and his greeting is hushed. As the two men pass out of the city together toward the west, their pace accelerates, and they do not look back. They give us the feeling that they are afraid of something back there in Jerusalem. Only when they round the bend and become invisible to anyone standing on the city wall do the two men begin to relax and to talk. There are two men going down the road now, and that is significant. A time was when Cleophas might have walked down that road all by himself, but his life was touched by another, and whoever was touched by that other's life was brought into community. You did not follow that prophet from Galilee alone. You went with him as part of a fellowship, as one dedicated to a new society. Even now, when that prophet seems so out of touch, they are brought together, these two men, by the impact of that prophet upon their lives. Once they shared a common hope. Now they are bound by a common tragedy. The problem for them is to make sense of it all. Here were the ingredients of the puzzle. Jesus of Nazareth, a prophet in what he did and in what he said, who kindled an ancient hope, yet gave that hope a strange twist, who inspired intense devotion, and yet was betrayed by one of his closest associates, who rode into the city as a king and staggered out as a condemned criminal, who made splendid promises and yet died ignominiously. And add to this a story told this morning by some women of the group that he had lived again, that he was alive, that the tomb was open. What sense could these two men make of all that? Cleophas and his fellow traveler were not the only ones to ask this question. About 150 years later, a pagan philosopher named Celsus became annoyed at the increasing interest that people were still taking in that prophet from Nazareth. He read the same scriptures as the Christians possessed, but he came to this conclusion. Jesus, having gathered around him 10 or 11 persons of notorious character, the very wickedest of tax collectors and sailors, fled in company with them from place to place and obtained his living in a shameful and importunate manner. Now, there's just enough truth in that interpretation to make it a very effective bit of character assassination. The same is true of Celsus' remark that Jesus promised the kingdom to those who were stupid, childish, and sinful, and his assertion that the whole resurrection event rested on the hysterical testimony of a group of frantic women. Modern-day propagandists have nothing on Celsus. Celsus described the picture of Jesus' life as he saw it, but so much depends and how you look at the picture. Perhaps you recall seeing one of those trick pictures which have a way of rearranging themselves before your eyes. For example, there is an old picture called Vanity. It shows a beautiful woman making herself up at a dressing table. But if you look at the picture for a while, the pattern changes suddenly, and you see in the dressing table mirror the outline of a skull. Another old picture that often goes along with the one called Vanity, I suppose it was drawn by the same individual, is a picture called Gossip. It shows some elderly ladies with their heads close together drinking tea. Again, as you concentrate on the picture, the configuration of the lines seems to change, and suddenly you behold a pair of silly-looking donkeys. Now, nothing changes, really, in the composition of those two pictures. Precisely the same arrangement of light and shade, of line and open space is there all along. There is no tampering with what's out there in front of you. What changes is the shape of your own perception, the way in which you, the observer, select out details and put them together. So much depends, you see, on how you look at the picture. But when it came to looking at the picture of the recent history in Jerusalem, these two men walking down the road to Emmaus were in a quandary. They couldn't find a meaningful pattern in the picture, no matter how they looked at it. They tried. They conducted an incessant post-mortem of recent events as they walked along. But all they could see in the picture was hate, cruelty, suffering, death, defeat, and despair. But now a new factor enters into our own picture of that journey from Jerusalem to Emmaus. There is still another figure walking down the road. How did that other fellow get in here? Well, the record does not say. We may regard him as an apparition, a spiritual presence symbolically portrayed. We may see him simply as a flash of insight. But there he is. Jesus himself approached and walked along with them. He wants to know what it is that Cleopas and his companion are talking about with so much intensity. Well, that's a surprise. This strange ignorance draws the two men out of themselves. They stopped, their faces drawn with misery. It seems that this stranger is unaccountably aware of what's been going on. Haven't you heard all the things that happened recently? What things? And so they are forced to go over the whole affair again from the very beginning. They must face again all the brutal facts. They try to set the third man straight, but when they are finished with their story, he calls them slow of understanding, slow to believe. Was it not inevitable that Christ should suffer like that and so find his glory, he asks. Well, the man has some nerve. But Cleopas and his companion are too dejected to feel much annoyance, so they let the man talk. And then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, we read he explained to them. And now it is that a remarkable thing happens. The whole picture rearranges itself before their eyes. The details remain the same. Not one fact is altered, but a new pattern emerges. No longer is the picture merely that of a deluded young man who goes to a sordid death. Now it becomes a sublime portrait of God's compassion. No longer is the picture a commentary on the futility of human dreams. Now it is the revelation of a more than human victory. The three men walk on into the sunset. At last they come to the poor village of Emmaus, situated among the western hills. The third man is invited to stay overnight with the others. He hesitates at first, but they urge him. Still, they don't know who he is, but they do know what he has done for them. He has given them a new perspective on the prophet, a new perspective indeed on all of history, a new perspective on themselves. Their hearts are burning within them. And now they sit down to supper. It is the third man who so obviously bears the truth, who is asked to say the blessing. And then it happened, says Luke. Then it happened. While he was sitting at table with them, he took the loaf, gave thanks, broke it, and passed it to them. Their eyes opened wide, and they knew him. He vanished then, but only in a certain sense. The point is that ever since that Sunday, many centuries ago, there has been a third man walking down the road. Wherever there are two or more together who share his hope and grieve at his tragedy and still look for his triumph, he goes along with his truth and his love. And always he makes people look at the picture in a new way. Sometimes people find him joining them at sunrise. Sometimes they do not perceive his unobtrusive step until the day is far spent. But he is walking down that road, down all the roads of the world where people are going in search of meaning for their lives. Haven't you heard his footfall coming up behind you as you journeyed down the road? Haven't you heard? When I was no longer a small boy, I went again to see that church of the resurrection in the little village in the Hudson Valley. The painted toadstools were largely chipped away from those small windows. Behind the altar hung a curtain. The current priest preferred it to the distraction of an inferior work of art. But behind the curtain was a surprise. There in the darkness, hidden from the congregation, between the wall and the curtain, the three men still sat around the table at Emmaus. And I fancied I saw with them still another, an old Swedish man who wasn't much of an artist, but did the best he could to celebrate the life of toadstools and butterflies, who once informed us boys that fishing was a cruel hardship on the tender earthworm, who passed the chalice down the little rail with great awe, speaking in whispers of the new life that entered the world on Easter Day.
Rise up, my heart, with gladness, and hear the news today. Now let all gloom and sadness be gone without delay. Lifeless our Savior lay, so too shall we.
Been listening to The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, with Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr., Minister. For copies of today's sermon or comments on this program, please contact the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth, 55812. And please join us next week at this same time for The Living of These Days.